just want sex in the morning, sex in the morning, when I'm not my best.
Want sex in the morning, petting and pawing, tearing at my breast.
Want someone who's winsome, someone to pin, someone to undertake.
Want someone to fall on, someone to crawl on, someone half away.
Want sex in the morning, sex in the morning, covers at my knees.
Want rotten conditions, passive positions, I am a trapeze.
Want someone who's sleepy, someone who's keeping nothing in two days.
Want somebody first hand, someone to burst, and then go back to sleep.
There is nothing I like better than a jostle now and then, with the hands under the sweater and the back that starts to bend. But before my eyes are open, I don't want to have to hide from a simpleton still poking with a thimble full of pride.
Boys want sex in the morning, sex in the morning, soiling the sheets.
Sex while I'm yawning, suddenly spawning, when I'm half asleep.
Want someone unconscious, somebody not just waiting for a thrill.
Want sex with surprises, sex with sunrises, someone on the pill.
There is nothing like a lover who can satisfy your needs, and the joy when you discover just how often he succeeds. But before my eyes can focus, I don't need him to surprise by descending like some locust on a field of sleeping thighs.
Boys want sex in the morning, sex in the morning, when I'm still not fresh.
Want something that strikes them, someone who likes them, fondling their flesh.
Want someone to take and someone to break and comment on their size.
Want someone to prod and someone who'll nod and then just close her eyes.
And that was Uncle Banzai, Boys Want Sex in the Morning, recorded live at the Backstage May 2nd and 3rd, 1986, 22 years ago. I like it. I play it a lot. And you're tuned to Free Radio, 101.1 FM, freakradio.org. My name's Robert Norse, and the name of the show is Bathrobes, Pierres, Broadsides. And we're broadcasting, of course, at 101.1 and www.freakradio.org. May have said that before, but I'll say it again and again and again. Phone number to call is 427-3772, and lines are open now in case you have any breaking news, questions that might break the bank, whatever seems to come to mind. I'll be on here on the air with you until 8 o'clock. And I have a guest in the studio with me who's going to kind of keep an eye on what's going on. She's a potential volunteer who's kind of sniffing out the territory. She works full-time, and she's not got a lot of time to herself to do this, but she has an interest. She's been listening to the show for some time, so naturally I lured her into the studio. Why don't you introduce yourself, Leela?
Hi, my name is Leela. I'm a local resident for my whole life, 29 years, mostly in Boulder Creek, but from time to time live in Santa Cruz. And yeah.
And here you are. I know you've been listening to the show for a while, and you're wondering what you can do to help HUF, that famous Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom organization, once you find you have some time to help.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And you've actually been looking over the reams of literature I've laid upon you. And indeed, Huff needs volunteers. Huff is a local, very small civil rights organization concerned with essentially exposing abuses and crazy laws and discriminatory behavior against homeless people, particularly individual cases. You can find articles written by Huff members like Becky Johnson. She's written one recently. It's on indiebay.org/Santa Cruz. That's a good website to catch a lot of breaking news that concerns homeless people in terms of discrimination problems or police abuse. Again, that's just Google for IndyBay, IndyBay.org, and then look for Santa Cruz. Click on Santa Cruz, and you'll find a number of stories. Another good websites are the Huff website itself, HuffSantaCruz.org, and HumanityForHomeless.blogspot.com, HumanityForHomeless.blogspot.com. That's Tim Rumford's website. He is really, in spite of serious family crises and a debilitating personal illness, has been putting in hours and hours, hundreds of hours, on restoring civil rights for homeless people and feeding them for a whole year, or 9 months. I'm not quite sure, 9 months to a year. He was feeding people on the streets on Monday night. So good website, too. A lot of videos, a lot of slideshows, and a lot of stories, and particularly this one story, which appears on all three websites, about a Jason Pascal, African-American tarot card reader, who got called a nigger and spat on, and when he tried to make a complaint, he himself was arrested. That's a part of the story, and there are other sides to it as well, but it's an interesting story to look at, and one which we followed here on Free Radio. So I'm going to take another brief musical break, because I want to make sure I've got this tape set up properly, and I don't want to put our guest on the spot. and actually, what I'm going to do with you, Leela, is what I told you before, is I'm going to have you respond just to what you hear. If you find something that you think excites your comment or interest, you know, we can have you comment on it. I just like to have people who are interested in these issues show up. And don't know what's going to happen. And indeed, out there, if you, the listener, have something you want to say, hey, we want to hear it. Or if we don't, well, that's maybe all the better. Give a call, 427-3772. Here's another one of my favorites. It's called The Rich Will Never Be Poor by Carol Denny.
As certain as the sun will rise and politicians have lying eyes, as sure as suffering multiplies, the rich will never be poor. As certain as in life you learn, the rich have money and time to burn, the rich will counsel you, wait your turn, in heaven you'll get some more. As sure as poverty plagues the land, the rich will give you a helping hand, as soon as mountains return to sand and oceans leave the shore. Count on nothing in life so well, that if the rich go straight to hell, lots are something they buy and sell, they'll never enter the door. Clearly all that you need in life, to be at peace in a world of strife, the company of a man or wife, and lots of money in store. Life is simple and so complete, with faithful friends and some bread to eat, a solid roof and a room with heat, and stocks and bonds galore. The rich will probably tell you, nay, it's inner riches that really pay. The rich have always got lots to say as they watch their assets soar. Count on nothing in life so plain, the poor have water, the rich champagne. The market rises to this refrain, the rich will never be poor, the rich will never be poor. Sure as life is a strange affair, in need of some robust repair, the rich don't actually have to care, the rich will never be poor. Maybe people are all the same, but the rich are playing a different game. You take your chances and take your aim, you'll never even the score. The rich can't help it if life's unfair, the richer people, they really care. They often mention it's hard to bear, they're burdened at their core. Some say no, but it's plain to see, the rich are different than you and me. The rich are different as they can be, The rich will never be poor. The rich will never be poor. The rich will never be poor. The rich will never be poor.
Well, according to Carol Denny, the rich will never be poor, and that's the name of the album. And you can get it if you go to www.caroldenny, all one word, all small letters, D-E-N-N-E-Y, .com. So, well, now we're going to zip into a few interviews here. I assume you have no thoughts on that last song. Not at the moment yet.
Not at the moment.
We may force you to sing if this keeps up. Here's some street interviews which I picked up in the last week, and we may then go back to some earlier interviews because I took a lot of tape at the anti-military. Anti-Marine, anti-war rallies on UCSC about a week ago, which apparently were successful in distracting and diverting the Marine lie machine from proceeding to line up innocent victims for cannon fodder and war criminal status over in Iraq. That is to say, the Marines were recruiting at the job fair on campus, and there was a lot of protest about it. So, but this is from the streets downtown.
Okay, well, it's about 8:30. I'm here on Sunday, the 27th, in front of the Metro, talking with
Corey Ray Hilliard.
And Corey, you're coming from quite an event.
Yeah, it's called the Derby Q they have here in Santa Cruz. It's a Derby skate park. It's the oldest skate park in the world that was actually built for skateboarding here in Santa Cruz. And Consolidated has a thing there. It's built from Skateworks downtown, and we support our local skaters around here. So a lot of people showed up. Everybody showed up. The Vans.
How many people showed up?
Oh, there was a few hundred. There
wow.
was a few hundred there.
And a few dozen cops.
Yeah, the cops showed up in force. They were looking for. It was funny because people were ollieing head high right by the cops' head without helmets. Everybody skated without helmets. They didn't say anything about helmets. They were looking for pot. They were looking for marijuana.
Marijuana.
Yeah, that's
the dread marijuana.
They were not there to enforce the rules of the park, which are helmets and all this stuff required. They were there just looking for the dreaded marijuana.
Now, were there any injuries as a consequence of people not having helmets? Or?
As a matter of fact, no, there were none at all. A lot of people fell down, and some people fell all day in their drunken stupor, but there were
drunken?
None.
I mean, there was alcohol as well as marijuana?
Oh, well, there was adults there, you know. There's adults having Bud Light, doing, you know, skating, having fun, having a good time. There's a lot of families there.
Police arrest family members for open container?
No, they just came in. They came in really quick. They were enforced. There was probably the biggest cops around here. I haven't seen it before.
How many police do you estimate?
There was four of them.
Okay.
It showed up through the back. They came in. They looked around at everybody. There was they walked around the whole entire place and looked at every spot where people were sitting. They looked at every person, and then they made sure there was no marijuana abuse, I guess, the devil going on.
Yeah, why do you say they're from marijuana? Why might they not have been after, let's say, weapons, terrorists, good-looking gals, whatever?
Well, I wouldn't put it past them to be looking for the good-looking gals. Because one of the cop chicks, the one chick, she did look fully gay, yeah.
I see. But, what I mean is, did they say to you, we're looking for marijuana? How did you interpret?
They did tell people, we're looking for marijuana. Don't worry, we're not worried about the helmets. We're looking for marijuana.
Did you talk to them yourself, or did you hear this?
No, I heard that out of their mouth. They told this one kid, is it okay if I skate without a helmet? They go, we're looking for potheads, you know.
So safety be damned, we're interested in the drug war.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because we want to take your medicine, you know, and call it a lie and call it a drug. And then we're going to, well, the city of Santa Cruz will, what they'll do is they'll put you in Prop 36 court, and then they'll charge you $1,200,
$1,500. Well, that's a nice money-making scheme. Now, come on now. Show a little respect for our city.
It is a good scam, but they're scamming me hard because I don't have the money, so I get to do hours for it. How can I find a job and do what I need to do when I got to do 50 hours to give to the city because I own? I told them to remand me, and they refused to remand me for in lieu of a $350 fine. They refused to remand me.
Wow. I guess you can just...
Probation refused to remand me.
So have you essentially dropped out of the program? And?
No, I was supposed to graduate Friday.
Oh. Well, aren't you proud?
Oh, yes. Yeah. They showed me my certificate and told me to get out of the courtroom until I got a money or hours.
Charming.
So I was pleased. Yep.
And for those who don't know, Proposition 36 is a measure that was passed, around 2000, which actually we had a lot of hope for it at the time, which makes first-time hard drug use immediately divertible into programs. And unfortunately, it proved a boon for programs rather than a way of, I guess in a way it lessens the drug situation or the harsh punishments the drug prohibition war induces. But we hear criticism of Proposition 36 and its impact locally. You can actually also hear, I've heard it being criticized from the right as well as, you know, simply enabling drug use of a bad kind, when in fact the only a little more tough with these folks and just threw away the book, or, you know, we're harsher in your penalties, that would be a better idea. I, of course, think that's ridiculous. And you need to medicalize the problem entirely. As a heroin user, Lisa, what would you say about that?
Are we talking about marijuana?
Proposition 36 talks about hard drugs, I believe. Marijuana is an infraction. Well, it's a low-grade misdemeanor, although it is still harassable. And police, of course, use these laws downtown to mess with people still.
Mm-hmm.
And particularly sheriffs and the county and so forth. And these are state laws. Some people think, oh, it's just the feds. But no, it's the state authorities, it's the local authorities, people who should know better, who have been essentially told by the community, lay off marijuana users, lay off marijuana growers. Whether they're medicinal or recreational, lay off.
Lay off meaning?
Don't harass them.
Okay.
Don't hassle them. I mean,
mm-hmm.
go after crimes of violence. Go mm-hmm. after serious crimes. But the police have their own priorities. The
mm-hmm.
sheriffs have their own priorities. And the DA, Bob Lee, has his own priorities.
So you want to know how I feel about the proposition?
Well, I was actually kind of making a facetious comment. If you have something that you want to say about it, you're welcome to do that.
I mean, I definitely agree. I don't feel like first offender or second or third. You know, I don't feel like drug offense needs to be dealt with the same way as a violent crime. Of course, I think people need help and support to make better choices if they're not making good choices in their life. I would need to hear more. You're saying, you know, it's been criticized by...
Well, there's some people who believe marijuana should be kept illegal because it's a gateway drug. And, you know, it grows hair on your palms, produces chromosomal damage, you name it. I mean, they've got all kinds of ancient myths and rumors. But the real question I have is why, in an enlightened community like Santa Cruz, aren't the authorities following what the majority wants to do?
Mm-hmm.
And the answer, of course, is that the politicians essentially are afraid of the police, or they are... you know, apprehensive of offending the police lobby. We saw this with Councilmember Madrigal when he made a mention of possible racial profiling Halloween before last. He said he thought he saw an incident that might have been racial profiling. Latino guys stopped because of their race rather than because of suspicion of a specific crime.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't accuse the police of it, but he said it concerned him. That's why he didn't want to immediately implement triple fine zones, which, by the way, are now being implemented not just in the city at Halloween and at New Year's, but in the county on the beaches on July 4th, which has excited, interestingly enough, a lot of criticism from normally conservative locals who would like nothing better than see every homeless person locked up or driven out of sight. I'm exaggerating, but there is a general, among the same people on the Sentinel Forum, the Santa Cruz Sentinel is our local paper, on the Sentinel Forum you find this kind of bigoted attitude toward the homeless people. They are hostile toward the idea of the police making it a triple fine to have an open container on the beach on July 4th, I mean, which is, you know, understandable. I mean, we're adults. We should be able to drink alcohol, have an open container, even if, you know, a small minority of people abuse this. That's mm-hmm. no reason to deny
right.
everybody basic rights.
Right.
I mean, you have laws to deal with criminal behavior. You don't create more laws to criminalize everybody. That's the problem with laws like Coonerty's parking lot panic law.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody is allowed to sit in their vehicle for 16 minutes. Nobody is allowed or doesn't have a car to stand or sit by a tree next to the farmer's market and read a book. That's all illegal behavior now. And it's completely outrageous that this is going on. Or do you disagree, Leela?
I don't disagree.
All
I mean,
right.
I've lived here my whole life, and I feel... As the years go by, we have less and less community. We have less and less space to get to know each other, to hang out. That freedom of just being here and living in this town is like it's gone, or it's diminishing more and more every day. And I miss it. You know, my heart is just very saddened. Being somebody that I was born here, you know,
How old are you?
I'm 29.
And what kind of work do you do?
I'm a direct support professional for mostly people with autism.
How long have you been doing that?
6 years.
And is it satisfying or is it just tiring? What kind of, how do you feel about that kind of work?
80% of the time, very satisfying. 20% tiring, frustrating.
Are you unionized or not?
No. I work for a nonprofit.
And what kind of an hourly wage do you get?
Start at 10. I've been there 6 years, and I'm making $15.50.
And how much of that do you get to keep?
Oh, man, I don't know. I pay a tremendous amount. Goes out for taxes as well as, you know, medical insurance. So I've never actually done the math. About, you know, a $1,300 check comes out to $1,000.
And how much of that goes to your rent?
It depends on where I'm living. At times, 80-90% of it has gone to rent. Right now, I live with my mom, so.
Uh-huh, you moved in. Oh, boy.
Moved back
she's
home.
She's helping you out there.
I pay my mom, though, a little bit.
So you're a local person who performs local services for people most in need of them,
mm-hmm.
who yet is forced. Is it fair to say you're forced, that the rents are forcing you to live with your mom, or is that just other circumstances?
At the time that I was paying rents, what the normal rents go by, I was not able to do anything else, like pay for studies, pay for my education, and living with my mom, I'm able to do that.
And yet you actually have two jobs, I think you were telling me. Are both of these jobs having to do with home care for people who are autistic or?
Mm-mm. The other job is not exactly a job. It's a project.
It's a project.
Mm-hmm.
But it takes up a significant amount of your time.
Right now, yes.
And ultimately a bit remunerative. It's going to hopefully pay you off something.
Yes.
And if I guess it, do I get $50?
No, right? I can't. I can't expose it.
It's a secret at this time. But we will attempt to talk around it off mic here. But also, you want to volunteer to help. And
I do. Yeah.
You called me up several times. You arranged to meet with me today. We talked for about half an hour before the show. And you're also, although not, you know, you haven't got a script lined up of stuff you want to say. You express an interest in coming into the studio and just kind of.
Yes, ad-libbing. I'm a big fan. I feel so honored.
And you should take a look at this one. But that's another story. We'll get into that later, perhaps in a more private.
When I'm gone, please.
Maybe when she's gone. Well, no, it's when you're here. I'd like to. Whatever. So, if anybody has thoughts, comments about. I guess what I'm really finding out from you is these kinds of conditions that you're talking about, or that I was asking you about, if your mom wasn't around and you had nowhere to go, is it possible you'd end up on the street, or do you think that's unlikely?
I think it's highly unlikely.
So you're still okay. You would find, what, somebody else to live with, a cheaper place to go to?
Yeah, yeah.
You weren't forced back into your mom's house.
No, it was a choice. It was a choice, but yeah. My honey had to go back to school, and that was going to be impossible to pay normal rents for the time being that he was in school.
You're not supporting your honey at the same time.
No, I could have sacrificed the extra things I spend money on and paid a lot more rent, but I'm really more interested in saving for my future right now, and my education, really.
Let's get back to some more of the street interviews. And again, if you have any thoughts, let us know and we'll stop the tape. And that means you too out there, all of you who are listening, all five of you, or 5,000 for all I know, 427-3772 is the call-in number. We're here.
Anything else you want to say about this event that happened? Though, frankly, the information about Proposition 36 and its impact on you and others is probably more important than a day of skating or rollerblading or, what the hell is it? Skateboarding. I'm sorry. I can never get
skating was great. It was put on by Skate Works, Consolidated Vans. Uh-huh. Great companies. You know, I want to give a big shout out to Bill at Skate Works, you know. And the guys that consolidated it, and everybody that put it all together, everybody that put their hard work and effort into it. Like I say, the cops showed up, and they were trying to harsh the grind. But it's funny, when they showed up, everybody just went crazy, you know. Nobody left, but everybody, like the skaters went crazy. Everybody just started going nuts, and there's nothing. They kind of really just, it ran them off, you know. Pretty cool. I never saw nothing like it before in my life.
And how did they run them off? Did they just start going?
They just started, everybody started making noise, and they started, like, everybody just started skating the park all crazy, running into each other. Everybody was skating at once, like 50 people skating that little place once.
To the police, it was obvious that was a reaction to their presence.
Yeah, exactly. And they ran in, they walked around to every little crowd, and then they left.
And how long did the whole event take?
Oh, it lasted from 4 until just about like a half an hour ago,
Yeah, about 8. Any future events coming up that skateboarders should know about?
Not that I know of, Robert. But if I find out, I'll let you know.
Any court cases that we should know about involving skateboarders?
Hopefully not.
Indeed. We've been talking with
Corey Ray.
Thanks, Corey. Any website people can go to for more information or phone number they can call or anything that, you know, might further their education?
Weaselbeak at Gmail.
How do you spell it?
Weaselbeek at gmail.com.
That's your email?
That's my email, yeah.
Thank you.
All right. Have a good one.
All right.
And we're back again. Leela is actually, she's got to leave pretty quick, but she wondered if, I guess you had some thoughts on your contacts with police. I know we talked a little bit about this, and one of the concerns that Huff, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, has an eye on the show have, are police behavior that is repressive, laws that empower the police and disempower the community. What's your experience been? An attractive, you're not a single woman, you're with somebody,
mm-hmm.
but, you know, you're an independent woman, you're on your own. Have you had much contact with police? Or?
I mean, I've had quite a bit of contact, not personally. I haven't been in a lot of trouble myself, but one incident, there was someone, when I was living alone, a neighbor lurking around my house, and it had come up a few times, and finally it was outside my bedroom window, and the police came, and...
You called them?
Or? I called them. Mm-hmm. They chased him out of my yard,
Said, get the fuck out of the yard?
No, they chased him, brought him down to the ground and everything, and then after that, they really...
This is up in Boulder Creek?
No, this is here. This is
Santa
in Seabright,
Cruz.
Yeah. Seabright. They basically just turned the whole thing around on me and...
Accused you of luring him in.
Accused me of not wanting to... Because I felt bad. They were, you know, they get so aggressive right away. And I was like, you know, this guy's my neighbor. I don't want you to hurt him. I don't want him to go to jail, but I don't want him ever doing this again. You know, I live here alone, and they turned the whole thing around on me. They made me feel like I had, you know, because I had been compassionate about not wanting this man to be harmed, basically I had no rights to ask for any protection.
So how many cops responded to this?
Five, quite a few.
What time of day or night?
Very late at night, midnight.
And what was the nature of, was that, how old was the guy? Was he muscular?
He
armed?
No. He lived next door with his wife and his kids.
Was he peeking in the window with binoculars?
He had tried to come in the house before, and, you know, I had a lock that where you can open the door
right,
a few inches,
chain,
and
yeah.
He had tried that, and he's always extremely intoxicated at the time, so we would just send him home, and I actually had never dealt with it. A friend told him to go home, and this night he was outside my bedroom window, and I didn't know who it was.
You known it was him, you might have just said, go home or something.
Yeah, yeah. I didn't know his situation at all, and I was living alone, and it was...
And you were the only one in the house?
Luckily, I had a friend over that night.
A woman who was there?
A woman and her child who was there. And
looks like we have a caller. Let's see what the caller wants. Maybe they've had similar problems. Hi, you're on Free Radio with Leela and Robert.
Hi, Robert. I was just listening to her... tell her story about the cops and doing something and then not doing something.
Uh-huh.
That's the way they're trained. It's either bring them down or there's nothing we can do. That's it. They don't have any middle ground from what I see.
Well, have you caller, had some experiences yourself? Or?
Well, I got pulled over for a seatbelt violation one time, and the cop came up the side of my car, the passenger side of my car. I could see him in the rearview mirror, gun drawn up in the air. I rolled down the window, and he pointed the gun straight in at me and said, where's your license? And
no
I
way.
Said,
Are you serious?
I'm serious. BHP. And I said, you know, I haven't got any guns. What'd you pull me over for? I said, seatbelt violation. I put away his gun, and that was it. And I didn't want anything more to do with him because, you know, I didn't know the repercussions. If I filed a complaint, what would be the repercussions from that? You know, it's just, it's a rock and a hard place sometimes.
Where was this?
This was on, you know, where Soquel Frontage Road comes into Soquel Avenue just before it goes over the freeway?
Maybe, kind of, yeah.
Just this side of Dominican Hospital.
What time of day or night?
About 3 o'clock in the afternoon.
Boy.
Yeah. And
I had a similar problem with the deputy up in Felton. I talked about it on the air. This was about a year and a half ago. Deputy Smith, interesting enough, his name was. And he pulled me over because I had a bag covering up, sticking out of my rear, covering up one of my taillights.
Probable cause.
That was a probable cause, right. And I pulled over. It was about midnight. I pulled into the Felton area where Highway 9 and Graham Hill Road intersect. And I got out of the car, which I always do when I see a police officer, even though they tell you not to, because I want them to see me. I don't have any guns. I'm just, you know, how can I help you, officer? Get back in the car. You know, I said, okay. Yeah. I said, I've got to get something out of the rear. Take a look if you'd like. While I'm doing this, I want to, you know, essentially I was getting a tape recorder out, as I remember. And he approaches me, pulls out his nightstick, and starts to advance on me. Get back in the car, he says. And I say, said, okay. I said, relax. I'm not going to hurt you. I have a tape recorder. I says, you know, and I'm just recording what's going on. And he then pulls out his pepper spray or his taser. I wasn't sure which. It was a little item from his belt, and he was kind of pointing it at me through the window. He said, just, there's no need. Why don't you call your supervisor? You know, just relax. And he eventually writes me a fix-it ticket. And his supervisor, or is actually somebody else calls that comes over for backup to observe this. And then eventually he was getting in his car to drive away, and I got out to ask him a question. Get back in your car!
Yeah.
You know, and of course that was completely inappropriate. I think it's inappropriate for him to, I mean, you know, ask me to get back in my car even when I'm, you know, being stopped, provided I'm not menacing him.
Yeah.
You know, it's
you
not...
You haven't been arrested. You're just...
I haven't been arrested. He's stopping me... Actually, there's an interesting question as to whether it's a mandatory process or not, but, you know, I treat it like a mandatory process. So, you know, then he again approaches on me, he advances on me with a nightstick again, as I remember, although the story is getting a little vague in my mind. And I got back in my car, you know, mainly because of the threat of physical force backed up by a whole system of the district attorney, the judges, and, you know, the police department.
Yeah.
Enforcing completely unacceptable behavior from an officer. And,
yeah,
you know,
well, Robert, my brother was a Oakland PD for 35 years, and he gave me some advice. He goes, when you get pulled over, roll your window down just about, you know, maybe a couple inches, put your hands on the dashboard, and when they walk up, say, I have no weapons, what did you stop me for? But clearly put your hands on the dashboard, because they're worried about people with guns. And it's scary out there for them too. And I know they go overboard a lot of times, but that's what my brother said to me. And
right,
he just goes, put your hands on the dashboard. Don't get out of the car unless they ask you to.
Well, I think the less people are voluntarily compliant with the police, the better. Not because I encourage people to antagonize them, but I think people have got to reassert their liberties. Mm-hmm. They really do, because police are trained to intimidate you. That's considered to be a good way of controlling the population. And frankly, I think that's neither healthy in the ethical sense, nor in the psychological sense, nor necessary for good police work. Not that I'm any expert in good police work, but it's just that's just my impression.
And you know, one thing you made sure to tell me was just roll down your window about 3 or 4 inches, maybe. Because if you roll it down more, they'll stick their head in the car.
Hmm. Yeah, I mean, another thing is, you can do is lock your car, roll down your window very slightly, or just show your driver's license through the window.
Yeah.
You know, and say, this is my driver's license, otherwise, leave me alone.
Yeah.
And I don't consent to anything. You want to make an arrest, and we'll take it up in court.
Yeah.
You know, I mean.
And he said, if you do get out of your car, take your keys and lock your door behind you.
Right. That's advice, too. I don't usually do that because I'm, You know, I guess police officers don't usually attempt to search my car. My car is such a mess, who would want to bother, you know? But, you know, that's something that ordinary people who keep a fairly neat car might consider. Anything else, caller, you want to suggest or comment you want to make here?
No. I think I've said it all.
Hey, well, thanks for calling in.
Okay, have a good day.
All right, you too. Phone lines are open, 427-3772. So, Lila, there you were late at night, and you five or six police officers were, shall we say, giving the rough treatment to your Peeping Tom neighbor?
Yeah.
And did they actually injure him, or were they just rough with him? What did they do?
They were rough with him. They threw him, you know, face first on the ground. He was a fairly young Latino gentleman, and that
was he drunk?
He was very drunk. The fact that he was Latino, I was extra protective and concerned with the police, how they were handling the situation.
You got a soft spot for Latinos.
No,
eh?
I just know that the police can be prejudiced.
Were any of the police officers Latino?
No. Mm-hmm. No. Because
we have a number of Latino.
No, they weren't. They were all white police officers.
And these are deputies or these were SCPD?
I'm not sure.
Okay. And this was a couple years ago?
Yeah, it was a couple years ago. And it was exactly what you said, you know, they then just tried to intimidate me into not having, thinking that I had no rights, you know. And I just, all I wanted was that it to be made very clear to him and his family that it was not okay for him to be having this behavior.
And they wanted you to fill out a complaint.
They didn't want me to, no, they said there was no option. They said, do you want me to take him to jail? And I said, no. And they said, then that's all. You know, there's nothing else that can be done. And I called, you know, their supervisor the next day, and he was very apologetic and came and talked to them and talked to his family during the day when he was sober, and they were, you know, extremely...
You called the next-door neighbor's supervisor, not the police officer.
The police officer's supervisor, yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Because, you know, you can make a complaint for trespass if you want.
Right.
Of course, you have to told the person to leave your property.
Right, which I didn't do.
You might have, you know, had, I mean, someone stalking outside your, the police officers might have been technically correct. If you hadn't told them to leave, maybe there wasn't anything else they could do.
Mm-hmm.
But the appropriate thing would not be to, you know, criticize you and make you and belittle you.
Yeah.
If that's what they did.
That's exactly
unless you're
what
too
they did.
Sensitive here. What's
that's
going
exactly
on?
What honestly how I felt was, you know, they would have been more satisfied if he had broken in and assaulted me. You know, that would have been an exciting night for them. You know,
that's
whereas
how you felt.
That's how I felt. You know.
Yeah. The other thing to remember is one potent weapon to have with a police officer is what I had that night, although I didn't use it as much as I should have when I was stopped by Deputy Smith. And then I, too, subsequently complained about the matter verbally. I didn't make a formal complaint, which I should have, because Smith was way out of line with what he did. I had nightmares after that for quite a while. I mean, I felt unsafe on that road for a long time. And I'm used to dealing with the police. I deal with the police a lot.
Right.
You know, it can be very traumatic for people who don't have anything, you know, but doing absolutely nothing wrong, and they're treated like criminals.
It is. It's really traumatic.
And the problem with, the police will tell you, well, you know, we have to treat everybody as a suspect. It's nothing personal. You know, get used to it. You're in the police state anyway. They don't say that. But that's the reality often, you know, given particularly nationally, but also locally.
Mm-hmm.
Mayor Coonerty is pushing for more of these laws that, you know, make it illegal for you to use public spaces. So, any other incidents with the police you wish to disclose at this time?
Oh, just, you know, nothing too exciting. Just that what you're talking about, the way that, you know, on Halloween, you know what it's like on Halloween downtown now.
It's like a military training session.
Oh, my God.
Squads of six officers trotting around.
Yeah. And I had some legitimate questions that I wanted to ask them for my own safety for the evening. And they wouldn't even speak to me, you know. They treated me like I was a criminal. I was going up to them. I wasn't drunk. I wanted to know for my own safety. I had been hearing some things going on that there might be this or that. And I went and asked them, and they wouldn't even communicate with me. Not even say a word.
Were you alone, or were you with someone else?
Maybe with one other friend.
And did this differ from previous Halloweens? Did you usually come down on Halloween? And
you know, every year it gets worse and worse. I hadn't quite noticed such an intense,
repressive atmosphere.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I got to admit, two Halloweens ago, I noticed a lot of I know some serious repression that went down. A huge number of police dealt with one guy who was making a speech standing up. You know, he was surrounded by cops. And the depressing thing was that members of the crowd liked what the police were doing, even though there were about 15 or 16 cops around this one guy. Didn't have a weapon, you know. It was just sheer intimidation and looked like a training exercise, like something out of, you know, 24 or something, or one of these, you know, fascist crime dramas made real.
Yeah.
And, you know, it all goes along with, you know, extreme interrogation and the mask that police now use in the jail. They put on drunks over their face. They've had that for some time.
What?
Yeah, yeah.
What exactly is it?
It's a mask that they put over the face. Allegedly, it's to stop the guys from spitting at you or something, but it's a form of restraint, which can be, I don't know if it's painful, but it certainly is humiliating and awkward. And I've heard several people complain of it. I've never actually seen a picture of it. We probably should try to get a Public Records Act request and see what it actually is. Also, of course, we've had David Anthony Cross tasered to death by a female deputy in the police in the sheriff's office when there were six other police officers there when he was restrained.
Did
already.
This happen in Santa Cruz?
Yeah, at the county jail.
At the jail?
Yeah, it was actually mentioned in the Sentinel, you know, by the by. And so, I mean, you have, and there's no restriction. I mean, let me put it this way. If there are restrictions on tasers that have come out of this, I haven't heard about it. And when you try to get the mayor, whether it's Matthews or Rotkin, I tried to do it when Rotkin was mayor, and he's on the Public Safety Committee, which is the committee in the city council that oversees, the police department. You don't get much of a meaningful response from them about how many people have been tasered this year?
Oh my
you know, God. What are the protections for tasering? What response do you have to the kinds of problems that we've faced, you know, that tasering has produced in other communities in terms of the number of deaths? You know, you get some facile reply like, well, give them hot lead instead, you know, or we'll get this, I mean, that's not what you hear. But you have to use force if you don't use tasering. And
right.
That's one of the reasons they use pain compliance holds. They used to pick people up when they would not, you know, go into a nonviolent resistant, but, you know, go limp in a protest. Now they give you, you know, pain compliance holds. They twist your hand until it hurts. They will dab pepper spray on your eyes. At least that's what happened up in Humboldt County. I mean, you have a whole series of, essentially, it's a kind of infield extreme interrogation, except they're just trying to, you know,
right.
Use fear and force and pain to get you to comply, as though that was somehow a virtue, when in fact, of course, it's just the opposite. You're listening to Free Radio, 101.1 FM, freakradio.org. You can come and tell us your favorite story around the police that you've had, maybe a positive story, mm-hmm. Or you've seen the police do some good stuff. Feel free to call in and talk about that. Usually, I mean, it's good the police get credit for what they do. I tend to think, although among some of us, the police have a very bad reputation, and I think deservedly so. To the authorities, police, you can't praise them highly enough, at least in public. You'll hear the city council praising officers at great length and censoring those who wish to criticize them. Mm. Hence, when Officer Jim Howes retired with honors and he got a special presentation at city council, when I tried to stand up and alert the community to the fact that Officer Howes had attempted to crush free speech at the farmer's market by trying to intimidate Bob LaMonica, way back in 1999, from circulating a rent control petition that he'd gone door to door with an anti-homeless petition on Almer Avenue to increase parking restrictions, that he refused to meet with homeless groups who wanted to, you know, have some liaison with the police department, that he illegally set up a table outside Marini's Ice Cream, whatever the ice cream store is downtown. I think it's the other one. They both start with M, and I'm not sure which is which. But there's an ice cream store close to the coffee roasting company. There's a law that says you can't set up a table. But then it was within 10 feet of a building. I mentioned this to you mm-hmm. earlier. Police department did. They had no permit for it. But they were doing so arbitrarily for their own little benefit. And nothing wrong with a charity benefit by the police, although I get a little bored and annoyed to have these guys calling me on the phone regularly. But you know, if they're out there on the avenue like any other citizen and any other resident, any other person, they should have the right to do it, but not to violate laws that they themselves selectively use to harass
right.
people they don't like. They don't harass Democratic Party campaigners. You know, they don't harass politically correct friends of the city council, but they do harass, for example, Huff, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, when we set up a table outside the Pacific Trading Company to protest their pressuring the city council. Actually, they didn't pressure the city council. They just did a behind-the-scenes deal with the redevelopment agency and the police department to remove an entire 25-person sitting space area. One of
the
those
trading
planters.
Company specifically?
The Pacific Trading Company, yeah. Mm-hmm. They're a, you know, the fancy Dan outfit.
The store I can't shop at.
Well, why is that?
Because they're too expensive.
Yeah, they're pretty
ridiculous.
Expensive. Yeah. I mean, you know, I mean, I'm not trying to say that I, you know, I mean, I got to admit it. I have a prejudice against glitz shops and kitsch shops and knickknacks and stuff like that. But, I mean, people have to make a living, and they choose to make a living a certain way, and there's a certain tourist element that comes to Santa Cruz, and that's fine. It's only when they attempt to seize the public spaces as well that I get pissed. And they were attempting to run off the musicians and homeless people and ordinary elderly people who were sitting around using that area. You can't use that area because they moved the fence, the green, oh, 3 or 4 inch high spikes.
Yeah. And you can't sit
down. 4 inches over, so you can no longer sit there. And that was done at a cost of $6,000 or so, paid for by the police department with no public hearings. They just did it. And, you know, you don't get public hearings when they remove the benches downtown. You don't get public hearings when they put in these change-making machines that make 50 feet on either side a forbidden zone. So that's why people, one guy was given a citation last week for sitting 44 feet from a change machine in front of Borders. He said, you know, nobody warned me before. I was doing this all, you know, yesterday. And then when somebody else did it and the same cop, Officer Brandt, walked by, he didn't ticket that guy. And then later he didn't ticket me. So it's completely, it gives the police free rein to harass people. And you, I remind listeners that when you get a citation, you're not only facing probable $100 to $300 fine, but you're also facing a search. You're facing interrogation. You don't have to actually, the rule is you don't have to consent to a search, but if you're being ticketed, that amounts to arrest, so they can search you without your consent. But you should always say, I do not consent to a search. Mm-hmm. I have nothing to say. Am I free to go? I want to speak to a lawyer. Mm-hmm. That's it. I mean, actually, if you're a homeless person, it's am I free to stay and be left alone in peace, officer, is really what it is.
Mm-hmm.
And if he says, well, I'd like to talk to you some more, you just turn back to your book and start reading. Police officers, like any other person on the street, are allowed to attempt to make consensual contact with you. But police officers are trained to give you the illusion that it's not consensual.
Right.
And unless you ascertain, officer, are you, am I free to go? You have to ask them a very direct question.
Mm-hmm.
The officer might say, sure, in which case, I'd appreciate it if you would leave me alone, take a few steps back as I'm trying to read here. If the officer doesn't respond to that, you say, okay, then I'd like you to call your sergeant, have him come down, and we'll go through a complaint.
Mm-hmm.
Because I have done no crime, I've got no interest in talking to you, and you're in my space. If you want to stand 3 feet away and stare at me, I suppose that's okay. But if anybody else were doing that, particularly a homeless person with respect to a shopper, or a man doing that with respect to a woman,
mm-hmm.
and the police were called, you would caution that person for doing it. So get the fuck away from me and get on your way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you don't want to say that, of course, mm-hmm. to a police officer, unless you're so minded. You have a right to say that to a police officer. I don't think it's, you know, here's an armed guy with a gun and a badge and a lot of power.
Are there any resources that you can recommend for people really learning what their rights are? And
well, there's a really good occasional workshop that happens from the free school. If you go online for free school, S-K-O-O-L, just Google for free school, mm-hmm. Santa Cruz, you'll find, I don't think in this particular semester of the free school, and it's free, you know, you get to, sometimes you have to pay for the materials used, but it's generally free. I don't know if they're doing it, but they generally regularly do it. Rico Thunder, also known as Wes Modes, and Jason, who's a free radio broadcaster, I think they're both free radio broadcasters, actually, do a forum on Know Your Rights, and they do it publicly on the sidewalk. And the general rule is they'll put you through scenarios where one of them is a police officer, and I'll come up to you, and they'll try to get you to leave, or he'll try to get you to open the door to your house. good stuff. I mean, interesting stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I think solid stuff. The problem is that it doesn't really cover all the options for homeless people. Homeless people often have the situation where they want the police officer to leave them alone.
Right.
Rather than they, am I free to leave? The real question is, am I free to stay and have you not bother me here?
Right.
You know? And police officers will do other things. Well, yes, but let's. Sure, you want to help your community, don't you? Let me ask you a few more questions, you know, and your answer. You don't have to talk to them. You just go back to what you're doing. You know, it's also true with private security guards. But it takes a lot of. It takes training. Police officers, of course, train themselves to do this kind of stuff, and so do you. That's what. So do you. You need to train yourself.
Yeah.
To be able to resist this, you need. If you're going to roll up your window and lock your car door and get out of your car, you need to train yourself to do that.
Right.
Because you get threatened.
I would have no idea how to handle that situation.
I'll be happy to sit down right here. I'm not any threat to you. I have to get out of my car because I have a back problem. That's often one of the problems mm-hmm. I have. And sitting along in a position, I don't know how long you're going to keep me sitting there. It's going to make me feel worse. And so that's why I'm out. I'll sit on the curb if you'd like. You know, get back in the car. No, I'll be happy to sit down here on the curb.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not a threat to you, so let's not play games. If you need Here's my driver's license, here's my so-and-so, blah, blah, blah. In case you're wondering, you're tuned to Free Radio, 101.1 FM, freakradio.org. The other voice in the studio is that of Leela, who is my guest and a local person who is concerned about police misconduct and wants to be helpful in, I think you're interested in homeless.
I'm more interested in homeless. I just got an idea in my head about the police. That's why we got on that subject.
Okay.
Yeah, I actually am curious about how many beds are available right now in Santa Cruz and how many homeless people are here.
Well, now, there's a lot of... if you're asking how many emergency drop-in, walk-in sleeping places there are.
Mm-hmm.
If I walk up to today I need a place to sleep
mm-hmm.
without getting on a waiting list and without proving a lot of different conditions,
mm-hmm.
There are less than 40 tonight. Unless they've opened up the homeless service centers, I don't think they've completed it yet, but the shelter at the homeless service center is now going to serve, I think, 40 to 60. And that is it for 1,500 to 2,000 homeless people, some of whom you might say are also in Some of them are in the Page Smith Community House, but that's a long-term program.
Uh-huh.
Some of whom are in the River Street Mini Shelter. That's a shorter term, but still a month-long program
okay.
in the waiting list. Some of whom are in the Rebel Leaf Family Shelter, which is also a long-term and family program. So the real answer, though, is for emergency drop-in shelter, there's 40 to 60 places tonight if they've opened that up, or less than 40 if they haven't. Very few.
And how long are the waiting lists for these other shelters?
You know, I don't have that current information, but there are waiting lists all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And what that means is that if you come into town, you're looking for a legal place to sleep,
mm-hmm.
and you have no legal place to sleep, for 95% of the homeless population, you won't find it.
Mm-hmm.
And that doesn't mean the police are going to arrest you, because most people are well hidden. Police have many things to do. But they do give out 60 to 80 tickets a month, and they've increased that number recently, or at least that's my impression. So that's why we're doing the sleeping ban lawsuit. And good news for those listening about the sleeping ban lawsuit, this is the suit that we are trying to follow in the footsteps of Los Angeles and San Diego, which got rulings from the federal court, or settlements in the federal court, that said you can't arrest homeless people at night for sleeping unless you have facilities for them. And since neither of these cities have any facilities, mm-hmm. as like Santa Cruz,
mm-hmm.
like almost every other city you can name,
right.
you can't arrest them for finding some legal place to sleep. You can arrest them for other things. If they're making a mess of the environment, you can arrest them for that. If they're blocking the sidewalk, you can arrest them for that. If they're harassing people or making unreasonable noise, you can arrest them for that or ticket them for that.
Or go to the bathroom. You can arrest
people
for going to
the
bathroom,
unfortunately,
right?
Even though all the bathrooms in Santa Cruz at night are locked,
mm-hmm.
I think that's fair to say. Yes, after midnight, certainly all the bathrooms mm-hmm. in Santa Cruz are locked that I know of. Unless you can talk your way into a service station restroom, and that could be hard. Yeah, you can arrest someone for taking a piss or taking a dump. You know, that is true. So, but arresting people for sleeping is a no-no now in Los Angeles and San Diego, even though police are finding plenty of other things to arrest them for, dropping a butt, cigarette butt is now littering.
Wow.
Jaywalking. Many, many jaywalking tickets, even though, you know, jaywalking late at night where there's no traffic makes no, absolutely no difference and so forth. And maybe we'll do an interview with the LA CAN, Los Angeles Community Action Network, at some point on that issue. So we are proceeding with the sitting ban lawsuit. I had announced last show that the local attorneys are planning to file a lawsuit by next week, actually to file the complaint, not the request for an injunction, but the complaint. However, I've just heard from one of the attorneys that they are hooking up again with a Washington, D.C. attorney, so they're going to take more time because it looks like that Jenner and Block law firm is now back with us again, or there was some question about whether they were. Hi, you're on Free Radio with Lila and Robert.
From the 10th City in Ontario.
Hello. Turn down your radio.
Robert, this is David Bush.
Hey there, David. Give us the update. You're down there in Ontario, California, along Highway 66.
Yeah, and I'm talking to San Bernardino County Sheriff right now.
Oh, excellent. Put the sheriff on. I want to hear what he has to say.
Mind if I give him my direct attention right now?
Please do, but keep us informed.
Hold on. Anyway, I'm one of the folks. That's a radio station in Santa Cruz.
Why do you have a lot of fun?
Well, because this is part of a demonstration we're in a public place.
Okay, see that sign right there that says no trespass?
Uh-huh.
Okay, if you're in the city of Rancho
Cucamonga,
there's two signs right here that says no trespass.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
I would appreciate it if I'm not recorded.
Well, we're in a public place,
okay,
and I'm not... Well, we're in a public place, and I'm informing you, and I have a right to... This is Officer Pereza, and Pereza, and you're saying that I cannot record you in a public place, even though I'm telling you that I'm recording you?
If I don't want you to record me, no, you can't.
Bullshit.
In a public place?
See that sign right there, sir? It says...
I'll tell you what. He's saying that I can't record him, Rob.
That's not true.
He's getting very upset. So just to be cooperative with the officer, I'm going to turn it off, okay? If I'm arrested, I'll talk to you from jail.
Don't turn it off. Just leave it on.
Well, I don't want to offend the man. I think we want to have a good conversation. So.
You do. Okay. Well, I think if you can have a good conversation, it should be a public conversation. You're in a public place, so.
I'll tell you what. I agree with you, Robert, but, apparently...
Ask the police officer on what authority he's saying you cannot record. Ask him to cite the law. What specific law is he talking about?
I'll tell you what, Robert, I would love to, but...
You feel intimidated at the moment.
Yeah, I feel extremely... I think he's feeling trouble. So
the poor guy. Well...
Put him on the spot.
Ask his supervisor to show up, and you can talk to the supervisor, too, and he can explain what new code the officer is using. But I don't want to put...
I'll call you back from jail.
Call me back. Don't call me from jail. Just call me back.
I hope not. Thanks.
Yeah, leave it on if you'd like, though.
Yeah, I'm going to cooperate with the man. Thanks.
Mm-hmm. So that was a call from David Bush down in San Bernardino County. He and another activist are marching along Highway 66 from the Ontario, California 10th city called New Hope City, which we've talked about on the air, to the county seat, the county authorities urging the county to open up a tent city because the city has had to start restricting and exclude homeless people who are in this tent city, not because they're engaging in any criminal behavior, but just sort of as a matter of, I don't know, size or principle, even though we're talking about, I think, 6 square city blocks. It's a huge area that they've opened up for homeless people, and last July when they opened it up, we were all very encouraged to hear about this. But as you can hear, what's happening is they're being stopped right outside Renton, and they're being intimidated into shutting down communications with us, David and his friend, who are doing this kind of march. I think they have large signs on them. David often used to have a sign around his neck, houseless, and he would go into different cafes with his sign on, and they would try to tell him, "We won't serve you with that sign on," and he would say, "Oh, yeah, well, you ever heard of the public accommodations law that says you can't discriminate against people because, you know, of the class they're, if they're a member of a protected class. Now, whether homeless people is a protected class is an interesting issue. Anyway, I'm hoping that we'll get a call back from David. I don't think they'll let him call from jail, unfortunately, because his cell phone will be confiscated. But he will have a cell, even though he doesn't have a cell phone. So we'll get some...
What are they going to arrest him for?
I don't think they're going to arrest him for anything. I think they just want to intimidate him. But, you know, police can cook up different shit. I mean, who knows what local ordinances they can come up with. Mm-hmm. And hopefully they won't. They've already persuaded him to abandon a basic right, a very important right that would actually dissuade the officer from doing anything, mm-hmm. knowing that he, in this case, is under observation. And at least we got the name out. Probably we should have advised him to hand the phone to the officer and say, "Officer, radio station Free Radio Santa Cruz would like to speak to you," because they say it's their understanding and their attorney's understanding that you do have a right to record, and of course you do. You know, the local police have tried to stop us from recording. You notice the way the officer said it. He said, "I would really appreciate it if you didn't record." He didn't say, "Don't record, it's illegal."
Mm-hmm.
You know, he said he went, you know, he did his intimidating thing with his hand on his gun. And I'm not sure what his posture
right.
was, but obviously our man was intimidated. So you're tuned to Free Radio, and hopefully you're not intimidated. It's 7 o'clock. You've got another hour left. There's a free Pete Seeger movie happening, even as we speak. I encourage you to go check it out. It's a movie about Pete Seeger, the folk singer, and it is happening today, May 1st. Is it happening today, May 1st? I thought it was. That's Monterey County. Wait a minute here. I'll see if I can find it. Yeah. The Power of Song, 93 minutes long, at the Del Mar Theater, downtown Santa Cruz. The only authorized biography of the life of one of the greatest U.S. singer-songwriters, Pete Seeger, the architect of the folk revival, got a whole generation singing together while using music as an instrument for social change. There'll be a speaker, Jim Brown, the filmmaker, and there'll be music from the Santa Cruz Peace Chorale and Eileen Vance conducting. So check that out if you're not listening to my show, or if you're getting a little tired of all these strange phone calls from Southern California and bizarre stories from... malcontent women who come in with their complaints about police behavior. Let's get back to some of the tape. Unless something more you want to say about any of this, Leela?
I don't think so. I think I got to go.
Okay. Well, I appreciate your...
Thank you so much for having me.
Coming in. Why don't we take a brief musical break? And
because he wants another hug.
Of course. Two or three if I can get them. Let's try this.
Bill Gates lost $1 billion on Monday, and the mockingbird sang him the blues. The lilies all died in the garden outside, 'cause $1 billion's a hard thing to lose. The market corrected on Monday, 500-point plunge straight down. But Gates will survive his billions aside, 'cause he's got his feet on the ground. Yes, he does, 'cause he's got his feet on the ground. The stock market, people on Wall Street work hard, guessing the futures of wheat and of corn, guessing the futures of lard. But Gates knows that our prayers are with him, and that all of us share. The stock market, where making money's like watching it rain. Yes, it is. Making money's like watching it rain. the stock market's health is important. The people on Wall Street work hard, guessing the futures of wheat and of corn, guessing the futures of lard. But Gates knows we all share his vision that the market will rise up again. We cry 'cause we care about the stock market. We're making money. It's like watching it rain. Yes, it is. Making money is like watching it rain.
And that's Ode to Bill Gates, Carol Denny's collection, The Rich Will Never Be Poor. Well, let's see if we can actually hear this. The Marines, as mentioned before, came to the fair and didn't fare too well. Let's see if some of these interviews fare better.
Okay, well, it is April 28th.
And actually, that's not the right interview, but we will go to the right interview, and again, we will see how we do.
People are thinking of going. I think this will probably be a smaller event, but just as important.
Have you considered selling soap as well?
Soap?
You're a very good saleswoman.
Oh. Well, you know, I'm really inspired, partly by being here today.
How can people get involved with the socialist? Give me the organizational name again.
Sure, the International Socialist Organization.
Almost that. The ISO. How can people get involved with that?
Well, we meet every Thursday night at 8 o'clock. We have paper sales around campus and around town.
Where do you meet?
I just moved to town, so I don't know if you know.
Where does the ISO meet every Thursday? We meet every Thursday at the conference room A, or the Emma Platoon, conference room A above the bookstore.
Are non-students welcome?
Everyone is welcome.
But if they're try to stop you at the gate, then what?
There's no guards.
Yes, there is. I've come up after 8 o'clock at night. You don't get in.
Oh, okay. At 8 o'clock, if you're trying to get in, contact us as iso.santacruz@gmail.com and tell us you're trying to get on campus, and we'll call the guards in the main gate or the west gate and tell them to let you guys in.
You have some influence among the guards at the gate.
Well, you have to just ask.
Indeed. We've been talking with
Hector and
Rachel. Thanks.
Thanks.
This is a man wearing a cape on, nice looking business suit. He has a large erect phallus at half mast, which says Halliburton on it. And there's a George Bush mask which he's taken off. Who is this vicious individual anyway? Man does not know. This is very suspicious.
And it's kind of hard to hear this, obviously. I think it's the background noise is so intense it blurs what the folks are saying who I'm trying to record. But let's see what we can do. I'm having trouble hearing it in the studio, so I suspect you may be having trouble hearing it out there. I'm going to see if we can find some portions of this that are audible. And in the meantime, we will turn to an interview on the street from another potential plaintiff for the sleeping band lawsuit, Billy Starr.
All right.
OK,
Okay, well, it is April 28th, 2008, and I'm on the street in front of the Pacific Wave Surf, not too far from the Regal Cinema 9, and it's about 15 to 1, and I'm talking with
Billy Starr.
Billy, you have your own tape recorder. Does this mean you have been accosting officers of the law, recording their words?
Yep. We're here from Freak Radio, Hava E.T., right from Byron Bay, Pirate Radio from Byron Bay, Australia, with the Maui Express. It's good to be alive. And 40 Acres and a Mule, our new 200-hour digital video.
Very interesting. And
we'll take it off in Stockholm Syndrome.
Difficult to understand. But so we were going to speak as I was.
We're going to interrupt this canned interview to get a real interview from a real hardy, battle-weary fellow. What's your name, sir?
David Bush.
David Bush?
Yeah.
Speak up. Having a little trouble hearing you out there.
David Bush.
Okay, Mr. Bush. Now, last we heard, you were interviewing a police officer trying to get him to join your march in order to establish another tent city, right?
Well, something along those lines. I called them and I told them earlier that I was here by the side of the road, the San Bernardino County Sheriff.
Uh-huh.
And explained that my purpose was just to spend the night, that I wasn't intending to occupy this empty field that I was in, and that I would be moving on at 6 o'clock in the morning. And they said that they would bring an officer out, and when he realized that I was talking to you on the telephone, he asked me in a very forceful manner to turn the phone off. And I thought in a public place that we would be allowed to maybe have a discussion publicly about the rights of homeless people, but this particular sheriff didn't want to do that. So I hung up the phone, and now I'm calling you back. I'm on the side of the road, a Route 66, in an open, empty field. It's not fenced, and there's no business on it. It's a big, gigantic, empty field, but it's got a sign posted out in front that says no trespassing. And my understanding of the trespass laws is if you're not intending to occupy the land, that ever since the days when Okies first parked by the side of the road and on Route 66 back in the 30s, that if it was an empty field and you weren't interfering with anything, simply spending the night wasn't occupying, and so therefore you couldn't be charged with trespass. The sheriff of San Bernardino County said he'd speak to his supervisor about this, and I'm going to be hearing back from them later on tonight. I'm hoping that they'll agree.
So your attempt to soft-talk, schmooze, and bend over for the sheriff seems to be working, eh?
Well, I kept my face to him.
you didn't want to get him on your bad side or your backside.
As we all should, you know. I mean, these are human rights, and there are some good laws on the books supposedly protecting the rights of travelers and homeless people. And going back as far as I can see, one time when I spent several days in a law library with a lawyer looking at this, it's still the case in California that people in need can park by the side of the road and spend the night. Even in the case that I read, they had lit a fire and cooked a meal. And the judge said, well, trespass, you have to occupy the land. And simply being there overnight is not enough.
Trespass law has about, I don't know, 25 or 30 sections to it now. There's trespass with intent to occupy. There's trespass with intent to interfere with a business. You've probably heard of that one before. There's a whole bunch of different laws, many of them cooked up by special interest groups that restrict your rights. I don't know. I know that in Monterey or in Santa Cruz County, it's illegal to park by the side of the road and sleep in your car, generally, unless you can prove you're a motorist passing through.
Mm-hmm.
And that exception was written into the law by Supervisor Gary Patton back in the 80s. But otherwise, it's illegal to be on any road, county road or right-of-way They'll accuse you of habitating a vehicle.
Well, I, you know,
you don't
I
have
think,
a vehicle, so I don't know. What...
I think this is one of the good ways to find out if your local sheriff's department is, you know, generous and humane, or just out to really beat people with a stick on whether or not they'll look fairly at this law. And in a situation like mine, say, you know, yeah, this, you know, this is, this guy is not doing anything in violation of the penal code that we read. And there's a reason that judges have ruled, you know, that, just anything that anybody decides is a crime isn't a crime, that you have to go by the rules. So I think this is a good test. It'll be a good test of the humaneness of the San Bernardino County Sheriff.
Well, that's like looking for, kindness among the U.S. soldiers in Iraq. I mean, I would have a lot of, I might have more confidence in these people when I met them out of uniform, but frankly, once they don the uniform, it has a strange transforming effect.
Yeah. The fellow I spoke to did not want to do this publicly. Maybe.
Well, of course. I mean, because then he has to be held accountable for what he does, and he has to be held accountable for thuggery, for bullying, for inappropriate display of force, for violating your rights by violating media rights. I mean, I'm news media. You know, what's he doing cutting me off when you're trying to talk to me?
Yeah.
You know, that's horseshit. I mean, you know, I mean, again, it's hard to say, but as far as I know, based upon secondary research into the California law, which I didn't do directly, but somebody else did, you know, there's no expectation of privacy in this place. It's not a matter of begging, pleading, or asking. You simply state, officer, no disrespect, I'm going to keep recording this. The phone will stay on. I'm going to directly answer your questions if I choose to. But frankly, you know, I want to be on my way. I mean, if you think I'm committing a crime, you certainly have a right to exercise your authority and arrest me, and I respect that. But
well,
I expect you to respect my right and my right here to keep a record of this, because there may be some dispute later. We need to have an objective record of what goes on here. This
yeah.
is an objective record of what goes on here. And certainly you're not doing anything wrong or that you're ashamed of. I'm not doing anything I'm ashamed of. You know, you can... Yeah,
I'm
me,
not.
You know.
And, you know, this is the kind of situation where you wish you had somebody out here with a video camera.
Sure.
You know, I mean, they can... And, you know...
Every minute that you kept that phone on was another moment of protection for you, not just as it was happening, but later on, because it was evidence of what was happening in the event that something untoward happened later.
Well, I think it's going to be a test. They're either going to come back and arrest me for being generous and turning off the phone and giving them the benefit of the doubt, and they're going to...
Yeah, see, I would never do that unless I were, you know, literally scared into it, because I think, you know, I mean, it's like begging for rights as you walk through the country. You can't, I understand what you're, I mean, you're trying to make a positive impression, trying to cooperate with the authorities, yada, yada, yada. But, you know, another thing you're trying to do is inform the citizenry of their rights as you go ahead. Inform the people that homeless people aren't to be treated like shit, even if the police prefer that you, I mean, notice the language you use. I was talking about this on the air. You know, I would really appreciate it if you turned that off, I think he said at one point.
Yeah.
He didn't, you know, and the answer is, I understand. I'd really appreciate it if we could get on with our business. I'm not going to turn it off. I'm not trying to be rude or cruel or harsh to you, but that's just how it is. This is the best record of what's going on, and this is the news media listening, and I'm currently doing that. And if you want to stop me, you know, we can talk more. I'm happy to talk. But this is not going to be turned off. So, you know, I mean, and that's hard to do. I mean, you have to really practice it and decide to do it, and maybe it's across purposes of what you're doing down there.
I think, you know, that's really it. It's more important to me right now is making it to the County Board of Supervisors and making it before them and making that case for what the County Board of Supervisors needs to do rather than the sheriffs at this moment.
Mm-hmm. I hear you. I think that... The sheriffs are operating to some extent off the rules, procedures, and they're funded by the County Board of Supervisors, you know. So in a way, you're talking to the County Board of Supervisors when you're talking to the sheriffs. In fact, that's the muscle of the County Board of Supervisors.
speaking of them, I wanted to give you the phone number of the homeless services of San Bernardino County.
Okay.
Urge all your listeners to call them and to ask them to hear the humanitarian plea of the homeless people who've been kicked out of Ontario's 10th city, and for the county to show us a legal place where the sheriffs aren't going to come out and harass us, and that we can pitch our tent. And that number is 909-421-4641. And again, 909-421-4641 for homeless people, for the county to open up a tent city, human rights respecting tent city in the county of San Bernardino. And if the listeners would call in and just say it in a nice way, let's see how far that will go.
All right, so the number that you want people to call is 909-421-4641. You got an email for those who don't want to spend money on long-distance calls?
It would be to the County Board of Supervisors in San Bernardino County. No, I don't have the email. For just to email the Board of Supervisors. That would be the other alternative.
So if people are interested, Google for the Board of Supervisors, San Bernardino County, and drop them a line suggesting that their responsibility is, and frankly, the cost-effective thing to do is open up a tent city for people so they don't have to piss and shit in the streets, and also,
waste sheriff's time.
Create public health emergencies when they have to be carried away to emergency services. I mean, it's ridiculous.
Yeah. Well, the fellow's name there is Isaac Jackson, and it's a humanitarian responsibility for us all to look out for one another, to take care of one another, and to make sure that we all have food, clothing, and shelter.
Yeah. Tell it to the governor. Tell it to the Board of Supervisors. I'm afraid it's a plea that maybe resounds. It reverberates in the hearts and minds of people who listen to this show. Some of them, although some of them will think you're a bum and a tramp and whatever.
Well, most counties are run interesting, like a lot like a county jail, and the supervisors tend to be sort of like the shot callers for their little corner of the county. In every cell, there's always one or two people that are, like, out of control, but there's usually at least one person in the cell that's humane.
I think we're all humane at one level or another. The problem is that a lot of us are intimidated by those who either aren't humane or the institutions they work for have given them rules that are intrinsically inhumane.
It's the truth, I've spent months and months doing county time, fortunately not prison time yet, but in every cell I've ever been in, we all get to know each other as brothers.
Yeah, I mean, I frankly find myself more kinship with prisoners than I do with the guards, and that's not because prisoners are a better group of people than the guards. It's because, I have some solidarity with them because I'm a prisoner too, but also because the guards are engaging in behavior, incarcerating people, for example, for drug crimes, that is completely outrageous. It's a form of government-sponsored kidnapping, and it's also true for homeless crimes, pissing, shitting, lighting a fire.
Everybody, it's really apparent that really we're all dependent on each other. We're, for peace and quiet, for our fair share of the food that day. The opportunity to have a peaceful time as much as we can in a horrible situation. And, that's when people's humanity comes out, is when you, in the corporate system, tries to block these sorts of connections. It sort of puts up these illusions that our security is in the neighborhood we live in, or the size of our IRA or something like that, or how much equity we've got in our house, and then they yank it from you overnight, And the relations a lot of times in jail cells are a lot more real than what you find out in your neighborhood.
So when were you last in jail, David? We're talking with David Bush, who's on the road, wondering if he's going to be rearrested as he. And who are you with?
Charity Colbert.
Hey, Charity.
Had to go back to Santa Monica for a doctor's appointment, and we'll be back tomorrow. So I'm actually out here all by myself tonight.
Wow.
Had some friends stop by.
Uh-huh.
Going to do a little night of solitary meditation by the side of the road.
Well, feel free to call me on the Huff line, 423-HUFF, if you'd like, at any time.
Thank you, brother.
Of the day or night.
Okay, thank you.
All right. Well, thank you, David. Anything you want to conclude with? We're talking with David Bush.
Well, just, again, you know, the whole world has been coming up to the Ontario Tent City. Actually, they got better attention from the global press than the local press. And I think public officials out here are feeling the heat of that attention. And we want to make something positive come out of it. We want to get the county to open up a legal place for homeless people.
You're here.
Thank you.
Thanks, David. And that was David Bush in San Bernardino County, alone by the side of the road, wondering if the sheriffs are going to return as he treks on to the Board of Supervisors to plead with them to establish a tent city for those people who are evicted from the Ontario, California tent city, not for any wrongdoing, but because they just decided it would be inappropriate to have so many people there, even though they've got the space, but they ain't got the ovaries, so to speak. At least that's my perspective on it. Let's get back to Billy Starr's interview. Here's a guy who wants to be able to sleep legally, not everywhere and anywhere in Santa Cruz City and County, but somewhere.
I had it toward a movie at one point, and you'd had some encounter with Officer Sims?
Yeah, on numerous occasions. Him and his buddies, they broke two glucometers. I'm diabetic. They caused,
what is a glucometer?
It's a machine that looks a little like a cell phone that for monitoring blood sugar level for diabetics. They took the cyber chip out and fried it. And
did they do this in front of you, or did it happen?
No, it happened twice in front of me.
And what exactly did they say? What were the circumstances?
What it was, they were just trying to pull the cyber chip out of the side of it. They didn't know what it was.
And how long ago did this happen? Were two incidents?
Over the last 4 months, there's two of them that got fried.
And how did they happen to even accost you? Did you?
I was playing there where I'm supposed to be 14 feet by the curb there, but then
10 feet.
Yeah. Somebody was hungry, so I'm diabetic. I can't eat a whole loaf of really good bread. Somebody gave me some really good bread, so I was going to give it to a homeless man. And then Sims tried to accuse me of soliciting because I opened my case to pull out the loaf of bread to give it to the homeless man.
So you were soliciting to end hunger, and he didn't like that.
Yeah, I was soliciting free bread.
So you were soliciting to give away free bread.
Yeah.
So this is a Cooper and Pacific.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, was he walking by, standing around, driving by?
I feel that S. Sims has been stalking me.
No, but on this particular occasion, where was he?
Yeah, I was just sitting there by the park bench when I opened up my guitar case to get the loaf of bread.
You're pointing to the bench in front of the Pacific Wave Surf snow building here on the corner.
Yeah, I just opened my case and
had you been standing there before? Was he across? Did he approach you from the back? Do you remember?
No, he came up in front of me. He's on numerous occasions, every time I open my guitar case near, if I'm near, not right on the edge, then he comes and tries to give me a yellow piece of paper. I've gotten about $8,000 worth of tickets. And
how many actual citations have you been given by the police or Officer Sims?
I've probably been given a half a dozen by Sims personally.
In the course of how many years or months?
4 months.
Okay, for the same thing or for a different thing?
Two of my cancer surgeries got totally sabotaged in Mountain View. It wasn't all his fault, though, because on several occasions some woman was being, like, assaulted, and so I stopped to intervene that until the cops took one guy away. He was whacked out on alcohol and zombie drugs, and he was, like, trying to choke this girl and pull her hair out. So I told the girl to run away, and I tried to get her glasses back, but then the cops ended up hauling away. He bailed himself out the next day and just goes looking for the chick to strangle again.
How did this interfere with your getting your treatment?
Well, then one other incident.
How did that interfere?
At the Homeless Resource Center.
Before you go into the other incident, how did that first incident interfere with your...
Well, what happened was, it sidetracked us. The girl managed to get away unscathed, but In both that incident and one other incident where some girl was getting pounded at the homeless resource center, we all stopped what we were doing and said, you can't do that. Well, one tape player, one tape, two djembe drums, my backpack, all my ID disappeared.
By what? Persons unknown? Or
persons unknown.
You're not blaming the police department?
No. It's just because we got distracted with the Sean Asina stuff. While we were looking the other way, all the equipment disappeared.
We were talking about Officer Sims and the half a dozen citations you got. Were they all allegedly being performing too close to, or having a display device too close to a building?
Yeah, soliciting.
Panhandling within 14 feet.
Yeah.
Do you have any of these tickets on you?
One, I think I got inside my guitar. Yeah.
There is a distinction. I'm saying this for the people listening. If you are soliciting that or panhandling, then you do have to be 14 feet from a building, which means that in most areas you can't do that. But if you're playing a guitar, that's not soliciting.
Right.
Even if you have a guitar case open. However, that is, however, having a display device, and that has to be 10 feet from a building. So if he was giving you a ticket for panhandling because you were playing a guitar, that was an inappropriate ticket on his part. It shows he's either ill-informed, which he really should know this by now. He's been around for a while. Or he's malicious and intentionally misusing the law.
I've gotten reports from numerous people on the streets that feel the same thing. Like, he's kind of stalking. He's made comments like, nobody can do anything about him because Belcher's no longer chief of police and Habe and all those guys.
He had some special in with Belcher or out with Belcher?
I guess he has some out with Belcher because he's saying now that Belcher's gone, nobody can do anything to stop him. There's no police review board. There's only professional standard unit.
Well, Belcher was not a fan of the police review board anyway, and he wasn't particularly good at keeping the police in line.
The police review board disappeared with John Dine in the church where John Dine...
Well, actually, it disappeared 5 years after Dine's death in 2002.
Yeah, well,
let's get back to what you're talking about.
I wanted to file a personal complaint.
About the Sims stuff?
Yeah. And so I filed a... They told me there was no more police review board.
That's true.
Only professional standard unit. So I filed a complaint with the professional standard unit. I don't know what became of it.
They probably mean internal affairs. That's what every police department has, what's called internal affairs, where they examine their own police officers, supposedly investigate them independently, and then secretly come up with a decision as to whether they are, you know, the complaint is justified.
Right now, UC Berkeley's paying $57,000 a year for 24-hour campus security, and Berkeley's paying $80,000, and it's really good the way it's flowing. People's Park, there wasn't people hanging around bullying on people, or people used to be afraid to go there. But
this is a jump. I normally would not be encouraged to hear a lot of money being spent for, quote, security by police at People's Park, since one of their main jobs is to drive people generally out of People's Park to get rid of the free box and so forth.
Realize where they went wrong, you know, and they're employing more Rainbow Sean Asina kind of energy because they like the way the Peacequake went.
Where do you get this from? I heard the first I've heard of this.
From eyewitness and from their directly from their mouth, they said they're willing to hire us, even high school level diploma, to pay $57,000 a year plus medical.
To do what?
Help with campus security.
Yeah, well, I'm afraid they also hire First Alarm security to harass people in front of the library here. But that doesn't encourage me, Billy.
However, we may have some encouragement here from our latest caller. Horsewoman, welcome to Free Radio.
Hey.
Hi.
Power to the people.
Yeah. I'll buy that.
And I've been listening to Freak Radio for about a week now.
Good.
And I'm, like, outraged.
You're outraged because Free Radio plays such crappy music? Or?
No, I'm out. The last time I was homeless was when I lived in Camp Paradise in 2001.
Right.
And that was the year, wasn't that the year they passed the Patriot Act?
Yes.
Yeah. Well, things weren't that bad in 2001, but it's getting outrageous with the police and the homeless people now. And this is what, been 5 years now since I was homeless?
More than that. 2001 is 7 years ago.
Okay, 7 years. So I'm back in action. I'm not going to let this government keep me down anymore because I'm still a political activist and I was living incognito for 7 years.
Oh,
and I'm coming out of my shell now.
Right on.
And I want to help these homeless people file complaints against the cops. And because I'm a law student, I could do that.
Wow, we could use your help. You should come to a HUP meeting.
I couldn't do it under the law now. You know what they passed? They passed some government code that paralegals, if you're a certified paralegal, you have to work under an attorney now. What a crock of shit. They just passed this law like in January 2006 or 2007 when I was talking to my web designer, and I was like shocked. It floored me.
Well, you know, you can help people.
Horsewoman, hello. I am not a paralegal,
horsewoman.
I can help anybody horsewoman. File a complaint
hello.
Against the police.
Horsewoman?
Yes.
You don't have to use a paralegal credential to be helpful, although the expertise and knowledge you get through paralegal training is helpful. Just come to a HUF meeting or give us your number, and, you know, we'll arrange to meet with you to maybe help out some folks who want to file complaints or, more important, civil lawsuits or engage in other things. The complaints against the police department just go through the IA and don't really mean much, although it's useful for other court cases involving those police officers when, you know,
well,
those cases come up.
Well, maybe I should start walking the streets with you, because if we get the badge name, the name of the police officer and the badge number, that's harassment. Those police officers are committing harassment upon the public people.
For sure.
And that, under the law, they could be sued.
You can sue anybody, anytime, any place. The question is whether you're going to win, whether you have the resources to carry it to completion, you know.
They're harassing the people. It's not right.
I hear you.
Maybe we should file a class action lawsuit, the homeless versus the police in Santa Cruz County. I'll help them do that.
Hey, well, listen, you should come to, there's a meeting of the, on Saturday at 2 o'clock at the Firefly Cafe. You're invited to come to a meeting, as is other people, as are others listening, to the meeting of the Human Rights Organization. Again, that's at 131 Front Street, Firefly Cafe, 2 o'clock on Saturday.
On this Saturday, May the...
May the 3rd.
At what time?
2 o'clock.
Oh, God, I have to go out of town that day. When's the next meeting? Can you call me at home?
Sure. Do you want to? Why don't you leave a message on the HUF line 423-4833, and leave me your number.
423-HUF
423-HUFF. And that goes for anybody else who wants to get a message to me off air. 423-4833, and I'll get back to you.
4833. Okay.
Thanks, Horsewoman. I really appreciate the help, and I think others might too.
Yes. Power to the people out there. And I just want to say one thing. Don't let these officials, government officials, sheriffs, marshals, judges, and lawyers intimidate the people. Stand up for your rights. They're very intimidating. We need to start standing up and be strong, because God gives us the power to be strong. I don't have to walk in fear and worry today.
I agree with you.
You know,
I think
this earth is
important.
All of ours.
All right. Well, thank you, Horsewoman, and let's see some action to back up those words.
Okay.
All righty.
All right.
Bye-bye.
All right.
Phone lines are open, 427-3772. I'm Robert. This is Bathrobes, Pierre's Broadsides. We go till 8 o'clock, back on Sunday at 9:30 in the morning, in case you want more of the same and for a longer period of time. And now let's hear a little more of Billy Starr and his discussion of Officer Sims and problems on Pacific Avenue you can have with a guitar case and a hostile police officer.
I'm not interested. I don't care who gets hired. If it's a homeless...
And actually, we were talking about how he was commending the Berkeley police for hiring, or University of California up in Berkeley for hiring homeless people to patrol People's Park. And I said, maybe a little worried that anybody was being hired to patrol People's Park when the purpose was not public safety, but to eliminate people there at night, if depends on what the purpose is for these kinds of patrols. That's what the patrols, for example, have been doing around the library and the city council offices, is eliminate people who are falsely warn people that the areas are closed to the public when they're not. At least I've gotten two reports from a man named Lee, who's been on the show, at least his voice has.
Thug, or if it's a house thug, somebody who's hired to harass.
Hang on,
people who are hired to harass you are not being hired for a good purpose. But what I'm concerned about are the people who
have been harassing you in uniform, very well-paid people, apparently, if your account is accurate. You say, Officer Sims, he's giving you a number of citations. Have these gone to failure to appear, or have you heard anything about them?
I went to pee yesterday, and I went to shave and pee, and the county guys almost hauled my whole cart. And
you shave and pee outside illegally?
No, I went over to the vet's hall and did it real quick. I plugged in and shaved my beard.
You violated the Bratton order of no non-vets or no non-yogists?
I was in Air Force Academy. I went to the Gulf Coast Military Academy. I've been a USO volunteer since 1967.
Have you gotten any problems from Tim Bratton, who manages the hall?
No, I've never had any problems.
Okay, well, that's good.
He's in Santa Cruz.
No, any problem with Bratton, who I don't know if he is a veteran. He manages the hall.
Yeah.
There hasn't been concern about his locking the bathroom or closing the bathroom or harassing those who go. The first two is not accurate. I think he keeps the bathrooms open, but people who've gone into the bathroom have complained that he's followed them in, he's questioned them, and so forth.
I've had veterans tell me that they've been treated kind of gruffly by some people there.
Now, when was the last time you had an encounter with Officer Sims or any other police officer concerned?
It's been about a week since Sims has lit on me, but his buddies, if he can't do it himself, he'll send one of his buddies.
And what exactly happened?
Let's see. On one occasion, I was a girl. The 101 church there. They meet on the corner building there by the surfboard shop. On Sundays, they asked me if I played any gospel music. So I started to play a gospel song, and I wasn't charging any money. I was just complying with the request because the church wanted me to come and play guitar and piano for them. Mm-hmm. And so I gave her a sample of some gospel music, and then he comes up and gives me a ticket for soliciting because I opened my guitar case by the park bench to play the song for her. So they invited me in the church to play, and
It sounds, I think it is illegal to sit on a park bench, or actually to sit on public property, though I've never seen them I've never seen them enforce it on the sidewalk. It is illegal to sit on a park bench and do it, or, this may be the relevant point, within four feet of a park bench.
I wasn't sitting on
Were you within 4 feet?
I had my guitar case was right beside the bench.
That was within 4 feet. Therefore, the display device is within 4 feet of a bench.
It's actually within 10 feet, I found actually further researching the law. You're not allowed to sit within 10 feet of a bench or have an open guitar case within 10 feet of a bench if you're playing music. And you certainly can't sit on the bench and play music there, strange though that may sound.
Bench may... Actually, I can look at the actual law and tell you.
Yeah.
So it turns out you actually have to be 10 feet away. A display device has to be 10 feet away from a bench, according to... 5.43, the non-commercial ordinance, display ordinance. And we have a police officer driving by again. Round and round he goes. I'm leaning against the kiosk, and he's here for a second round delay. Billy, we're back again. You mentioned before that your attempt to get cancer treatment had a problem. On two occasions, you tried to arrange for cancer treatment. You say you didn't get it. And can you describe what went wrong?
My glucometers got fried. The communications didn't get relayed between River Street and Mountain View and Freedom twice in a row over a 4-month period. So the police department fried two glucometers, their blood sugar monitoring units. They pulled the cyber chip out the side.
So you mentioned. Now, did you ever complain about that to the about damaged property? And who were the officers who did this?
I don't remember the officer's name. I should have got his name and badge number, but they're on the yellow tickets because they all gave me... I mean, it could be traced through the courts because they all gave me yellow tickets.
And was this one officer or the same officer, different officers?
Different officers. Sometimes it was Sims. Sims got me about 5 times. And then...
You say only 2 glucometers were actually screwed up with, right?
Yeah.
So this was pursuant to tickets about having a display device too close to a
bench,
or
covering myself with a blanket. What else did I get a ticket for? A long time back, I wrote 1-800-BAD-SENATOR on an outhouse when they sprayed the Bonapple moss spray.
That was in the fall, right?
They gave me about $2,000 worth of community service hours for that.
My goodness. Well, we've been talking with
Billy Starr.
And Billy, since you did get a blanket band ticket, if you want, you can be a part of the sleeping band lawsuit. I'm going to give you a number to call if you'd
like. Okay, I'm interested in that. I'm going to have to make a pit stop, though, because two major cancer surgeries got sabotaged in Mountain View and Freedom. I got to talk to a State Farm claims adjuster and go to the...
You've got stuff to do, but you're interested in
it. I'm going to Natchez, Mississippi and Faraday, Louisiana. They just opened up a Delta Blues Museum there. My mom...
And Billy's got other things he talks about as well. But there's not much time. I've got about 15 minutes left in the show. Antiwar.org has a story. CIA director says Iran wants to kill Americans in Iraq. This is actually an AP news story from April 30th, 6:14 Eastern Standard Time. CIA Director Michael Hayden said Wednesday that Iranian policy at the highest government level is to help kill Americans in Iraq, the boldest pronouncement of Iranian involvement by a U.S. official to date. Hayden made the statement in response to a student question while delivering the Landon Lecture at Kansas State University. It is my opinion it is the policy of the Iranian government approved to the highest level of that government to facilitate the killing of Americans in Iraq, Hayden said. Just make sure there's clarity on that. I notice, of course, that he doesn't give any evidence, any proof, any documentation. And it's interesting, the media picks this up and runs with it, screaming away, as, of course, a second aircraft carrier cruises into the Persian Gulf. And the war hysteria against Iran is ratcheted up. In recent weeks, the article continues, AAP article, the U.S. officials have ratcheted up their complaints that Iran is increasing its efforts to supply weapons and training to militants in Iraq. Military commanders in Baghdad are expected to roll out evidence of that support soon, including date stamps on newly found weapon caches showing that recently made Iranian weapons are flowing into Iraq at a steadily increasing rate. Another senior military official said that the evidence will include mortars, rockets, small arms, roadside bombs, and armor-piercing explosives known as explosively formed penetrators, or EFPs, that troops have discovered in caches in recent months. The official who spoke on condition of anonymity because the evidence has not yet been made public said dates on some of the weapons were well after Tehran signaled late last year it was scaling back aid to insurgents. Admiral Mike Mullen, chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, has said that the U.S. prefers to resolve the issue through other pressures, but that it has the combat capability to strike Tehran, if necessary. Tehran is the capital of Iran. Hayden also said, that's the CIA guy, CIA boss, that the recent Iraqi offensive in the southern Iraqi city of Basra should stand as a clear indication to Iraq's neighbors that it intends to be a credible force in the region. He added that such activities boost the credentials of Prime Minister Nouri al-Maliki's government. This, as you may remember, was the, this is my commentary, this was the attempt to crush the militia of Muqtada al-Sadr, another Shiite who is now at odds with the Shiites who are running the government in Iraq, the Maliki Shiites, because of Muqtada al-Sadr and others claim an upcoming election that Maliki is likely to lose unless he dispossesses the Muqtada forces by force. Of course, the other militias that are in the country, that are militias for the two other groups that make up the Shiite side of Maliki's ruling coalition, have to do with the, I guess it's one's called the Badr Brigades and the other is the Dawa Party. They are a part of the government, so they aren't being disarmed. They aren't being told to disperse. They are, in fact, the death squads that the Sunnis, some Sunnis, have complained a lot about, and who actually, the main coalition, and this is making it even stranger and more ironic, the main coalition that runs Iraq for two decades was sheltered by Iran. And in fact, they have visited Iran, they're friendly with Iran, and Muqtada al-Sadr, who's also reportedly in Iran, accuses them of being Iranians, not in the sense that they are Iranian nationals, but that they are loyal to Iran, that their loyalty is not to Iraq. The U.S., of course, is engaging in this war dance against Iran, even though arms are flowing in from a variety of places into Iraq, from different countries ranging from Syria, Saudi Arabia, not to mention arms that are flowing in because they're being supplied by the U.S. government, because the U.S. government wants to buy off some of the opposition and supposedly turn it against al-Qaeda, which it's done successfully in some places, but the people that they're buying off are interested still in having the U.S. out of the country. And that's, of course, the primary charge against Muqtada al-Sadr, the guy who's running militias in Basra and in Sadr City in Baghdad, is that he's they call him anti-American. What that really means is he's anti-occupation. He doesn't want foreign troops occupying his country. I'm not really a big fan of the religious notions of any of these people. I'm not a fundamentalist. I'm not a theist. I'm more of an anti-theist. I think it's a delusion. But that's my personal, philosophy. The reality is, however, that my money and yours is going to fund this murder machine and this occupation looting machine over in Iraq, which essentially has imposed a puppet regime over there. And it's continuing to do so at an increased expense, not just in terms of your dollars and mine, but they're killing civilians now in bombing raids in the largest city in Iraq. Largest city, actually the suburb, Sadr City, which is a suburb of Baghdad. And at the same time, they're ramping up more war hysteria against Iran. Which the presidential candidates, you would think they might be talking about this, those who supposedly oppose, join the 70% of the American people in opposing the Iraqi war. But no, you don't hear Obama and Clinton trying to speak some sanity about this war hysteria in Iraq, towards Iran and the occupation madness in Iraq. You just hear, elect us and we'll take care of it for you. But actually supporting the, Clinton talks about obliterating Iran, and Obama is not a hell of a lot better. So it falls on people like the International Longshoremen's Union, who held a strike today, and I'm going to try to see if we have any updates on that strike. Let's see if indiebay.org has any updates here. They might. ILW to shut down all West Coast ports to protest war. And let's see if they actually did. There was a rally today. Let's see what the deal is. Well, there's some nice signs. War is not the answer. No war for oil and empire. Direct action to stop the war. Impeach for peace. Veterans for peace. Bring home the troops. Labor against the war. All these are on the San Francisco Indie Bay website. You just Google for Indie Bay and then click on San Francisco and find the appropriate story. 2008, the year to end the war. No peace, no work on May 1st. Is war illegal? The war is illegal. People are not. Again, that's, of course, about the issue of the criminalization of millions of immigrants who don't have their papers. Fight class war, not oil wars. That's a Communist Party, which are PLP. Lots of photos at the San Francisco Indie Bay website. And some other interesting things, too, on this website. Landmark medical marijuana bill clears California Legislative Committee. Yesterday, California's medical marijuana patients and caregivers were dealt a victory when the Assembly Committee on Public Safety passed AB 2743. The bill, authored by Assembly Member Lori Saldana, Democrat of San Diego, and spearheaded by the Marijuana Policy Project, would direct state and local law enforcement officers not to assist in federal raids on medical marijuana patients and providers. Yeah, right. I'm sorry, that doesn't excite me too much. I want to see them stop the state prosecution of marijuana, period. I want it taxed and regulated. And I want them to declare that the efforts of people like D.A. Bob Lee to criminalize clubs that aren't a part of Santa Cruz City, like Roger Mensch's Hemporium, stop. That is to say, existing law around medical marijuana is supposed to be that if you, you know, if you need marijuana for medical purposes, you should be able to get it without being criminalized for doing so. But that is being so narrowly interpreted by the district attorney's office, outrageously so, our own district attorney's office, that people are being prosecuted for selling medical marijuana to medical marijuana patients. Yeah, that's true. And the basis on which this is happening is not that there's a lot of major profiteering going on here. There's some standard of huge amounts of money being made, though I never heard that making a profit was some kind of crime in any particular business in the United States, particularly marijuana. But rather the claim by Bob Lee is that he didn't even know this, but his underlings knew it, and they told him so in my presence, that this was about a year ago, that marijuana clubs are illegal. All you can have are collectives. You're not allowed to have a club like Greenway's because Greenway doesn't provide caretaking services to the people that it sells marijuana to. Hence, it's illegal. He is not interested in closing down Greenway because it has so much public support. But he goes after people in the county outside that area, even though he's using the same rationale that would close down Greenway. And I keep bringing this up because I hope that some people like Valerie Corral or Anita Henry on the Measure K Commission or any activists who are interested in fighting the drug war would raise this issue publicly and strongly, but I seem to be the only person who's interested in doing it. So, I'm approaching the zero hour here. So let's see if there's anything else I want to quickly pass on before I move out here. Looks like somebody's calling in. Maybe this will be an opportunity here. Hi there, you're on Free Radio.
Was that reference to Measure K a one-liner?
Well, you can add a line or two there, Bob.
You didn't mean that seriously, did you?
What did I say?
The Measure K commission to do something? I mean, the whole purpose of the committee meeting was to disband.
Well, let's put it this way. The Measure K commissioners didn't like the way they were being treated by the city, and they didn't like what the city did in crippling the measure. And they claimed to be interested, some of them, in ending the drug war. Anita Henry particularly, she's been on the show talking about this. So I think people should use their position as a bully pulpit to do some counter-bullying. But again, you know that because you listen to my show, right?
If it were to happen, it would have happened.
The
purpose of the Measure K...
You can always hope. You can always hope.
The purpose of the Measure K committee to date has been to dissolve itself as quickly and quietly as possible.
Well, that's a very cynical view of our Measure K commission, I must say, Bob.
I'm trying to be as blunt but polite as possible.
You're not being funded by Raul Castro, are you, by any chance?
Raul, well...
Yes.
It goes to show you if...
No, they don't allow marijuana over there either.
Well, of course not, but they you're being a naysayer.
Oh, are you accusing me of being a naysayer?
Right. You're talking about Raul and delivering the socialist revolutionary message.
State
to
capitalism.
The island of
please.
Cuba for what? More than 50 years. I mean, what an accomplishment.
It's my fault. I even mentioned, I only got about 3 minutes left, Bob. Your point is well taken. The Measure K Commission isn't doing shit. But, you know, it is supposed to be doing something around making marijuana the lowest enforcement priority. And as far as I know, it's not following up on that very carefully.
I'll just say that Raul belongs in Cuba just like Assad belongs in Syria and Kim Il-sung.
Well, why don't we talk about our local politicians so we can actually do something about, eh, Uncle Bob?
That's a good idea.
All right. Thank you.
You bet.
You take care. Bye-bye. And because I expect Uncle Dennis to come waltzing into the studio with his retro music from the 60s and 70s very shortly, from the cream to the dregs, I'm going to waltz out of the studio. And as I do that, I think what I'll do is I'll play another song from Carol Denny. How about... Capitol Records. That sounds like a nice tune. I think I've played that before, but hey, I'm going to play it again. Thanks for being with me on this edition of Bathrop Spears Broadsides. I'll be back. You can catch the Saturday meeting of the Human Rights Organization. If you want to be involved in fighting police misconduct, if you want to fight for the sleeping ban lawsuit to restore rights to homeless people, come on. You can do it. 2 o'clock on Saturday, 131 Front Street, Firefly Cafe, or you can call me on the Huff line, 423-HUFF, 423-4833. In the meantime, try to do a little screaming on the street before they invade Iran. It might not be a bad idea.
If the world were the woman whose family was torn, Spanish the language she sings to her young, there'd be no one explaining why some mothers must die. Me see, hold the world like the woman. The child who is yet to be born, while her sons and her husband are sent somewhere to die. Me see, hold the world like the woman would cry. The world were the woman who lived in the town, full of wounded and children, and houses burned down, and families in pieces, windows broken, fountains dry. Me see, oh, the world like the woman. In the suffering and the pain, if the war touched the world, war would come to an end. If the war touched the world, war would come to an end.
And that concludes the Bathrobe Spears Broadside Show for this week. If you want to hear more noise from Norse, tune in on Sunday morning at 9:30. Anyway, we were just listening to Carol Denny. And nice little tune Robert left on here. That was, I guess, called Mis Hijos. My children... I don't know. My Spanish is terrible. My English isn't much better. And I am Uncle Dennis, by the way. You are listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 101.1 FM, and we're on the wide, weird web at freakradio.org. Stay tuned for From the Cream to the Dregs. We're going to 3 hours of music and news right here on Free Radio Santa Cruz. And in celebration of International Workers' Day, we're going to start off with Dire Straits.
Go down. Never done no man no harm. But I'm from that kind in Lymphosack. But I'm from that kind in Lymphosack. But I'm from that kind in Lymphosack.